Wow, that's so exciting to know. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again to tell the damn story. We have the legendary Alex Simmons here, and I'm Chris Ryan pretending to be a legend, and we have two great friends who are actual legends. Hello, hello, Alex. Tell us what's happening today on this beautiful pre-Halloween session of Tell the Damn Story.
Yeah, with the sun shining and the birds shivering, and it's really great.
Yeah, bro.
We have two really wonderful writers, but we get to talk to them as a team today. Tom Snagowski. Yay, Tom.
Yeah.
And Janine Atchison. Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Da, 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 da. I'm sorry.
And Tom and Janine have been on before. So if you're a constant watcher, one, there's a shot for that now.
Yeah.
And also, then you've seen them before. So welcome back.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome back, front, sides, all that good stuff. Yeah. First off, Chris, before we get into it, we are post New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
And these two marvelous people who've worked on so many projects, and we will talk about it with Vampirella and novels and a TV pilot and all this kind of stuff. What was it like for you at New York Comic Con?
I think we should start with Janine, since this was her first.
Yes, first Comic Con. Always a trip.
Yeah.
This is my first New York Comic Con. We had been together to San Diego Comic Con in July.
That was your first of that too.
That was
wow.
My first of that. But this one was great. It was fun. It's the first day is always really overwhelming, and just like the crowds, and until I get my bearings, it's always a little bit anxiety producing.
Mm-hmm.
But usually by the end of the first day, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And that happened again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but it was great.
Let me ask you a follow-up, since you mentioned San Diego. Having been to both of them now for your first time, which one was more overwhelming?
San Diego.
Ah.
You found San Diego more overwhelming
yeah.
than New York? Oh, I thought New York was way more overwhelming.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so let's hear the reason for both of you. Janine, why? And then Tom, why?
Yeah.
Janine, why San Diego?
Probably because it was the first one.
Looking at it that way.
Yeah. And I wasn't really familiar with the pattern of how he works a convention.
Okay. Oh, nobody is. No,
I work the rooms. I work the rooms.
He really does. But it was, I think that definitely in San Diego, the first day, I think I left early.
She had to leave. It was actually pretty funny.
Yeah. And my husband, his wife came with us. And my husband texted me and said, oh, I'm going to walk over to that battleship that's down the road. Do you want to go? And I'm like, you know what? I think I do. I think I was so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
To use that word again.
When a battleship is calmer than where you are.
She didn't have to climb it. She just could have to look at it.
Yeah.
So I want to hear from Tom, and then I have one more follow-up, if that's okay with Alex. Tom, why do you find New York overwhelming?
This year, I mean, I've done so many of these shows.
Sure.
I've been doing San Diego since the 90s. So, and same with New York, actually. But I found New York just like in your face this year. There seemed to be way more people. I don't think I've ever seen it so crowded as this year.
I think New York Comic Con may have done the impossible and outgrown the Javits Center.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they've built on, they've added on to the
right,
center.
Right. Yeah,
still,
yeah.
And it still was overwhelming.
Yeah,
the volume of people. I don't know what it is about San Diego. Just is giant too, and lots of people.
Yeah.
But there's a chill aspect to San Diego.
There. Is it the California vibe versus New York?
It's a San Diego vibe. I agree with Tom. Having done both shows, not as many as Tom, but I've done it over the years. San Diego does have a mellower vibe. There's, I don't even know if it might even be the terrain to a certain degree too, because the Javits Center is still in New York City. It's still, you're still surrounded by the city. And San Diego, you're in the city, but there's more space.
It's very spread out.
So there's a sense, there's a sense of breathing room, and there's also a chiller attitude. It's even in terms of the people who are working on the staff, there's a mellower attitude. They're still energized and doing their thing,
but
they don't have that New York grit, that New York aggression. And I was born and raised in the city.
There's an intensity.
Yeah.
Even just walking through a crowd, there's like an electrical charge.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I wanted to follow up in passing, Tom. Yeah. You said, and Janine, you were enjoying the comment, or you started it and Tom ended it, about working the room. And a lot of our audience are emerging writers or writers with far less experience. And you know what? It's really tricky. I was at a gig last night and I could work some part of the room, but other parts were not getting in. Let's talk about working. I'm sorry.
How do you pick the lock is what he's saying.
Yeah. It's always a skill set that people have to work on. So what can you say about how to work a room?
You want me to start or you want to start?
You're the one who's been designated as the worker of the room.
Right. And honestly, I'm not quite sure you know how to work a room yet.
It's on now.
No. She knows what I'm talking about.
But you know what? I will say this. It's interesting because generally he starts by going to see the people who he knows and connecting with friends and, oh, have you talked to so-and-so? But I feel like when we met the Vampirella cosplayer.
Oh, there was a Vampirella cosplayer.
Vampirella cosplayer in New York, and she was just adorable and delightful. And I was like, we have to get a picture with her. And I found myself telling her, we write Vampirella. She saw it. I thought, all right. Like this time it was me who was like kind of putting us out there a little bit. But that was fun. And like making connections with people. Right. So I think that was cool. But yeah, you have a certain way that you...
What is that way, Tom?
I don't know. I just... Charm? I don't know.
Let's start with the easy part.
How do you get the conversation going, or how do you introduce yourself, or what's your approach?
For one thing, I know a lot of people. So that helps a lot when you can go up to, say, for example, it was an editor that I've never talked to before, or a editor at a publishing house that I've never done any work for. I might say, hey, I just finished a job with Mike Mignola on Young Hellboy, and it was a real blast. And I see you got things that are like that. What's going on with your company? You use the reputation of the people you've worked for as well as the work, wedge your way into the conversation, so to speak.
And validate yourself too.
Yeah, it shows that you're not just some clown that's coming up to them trying to get work, which I shouldn't use the word clown because everybody who's starting out needs that opportunity.
Right. But everybody who's starting out feels like that clown. So this part of the show will be called How to Hide Your Clowniness.
How to Hide Your Clowniness. Yeah. And honestly, I think trying to step back and remembering prehistoric times when I was first doing this, when it was like the first time, I always found that it was your personality and your friendliness was a nice way to chip away at the ice.
Yeah.
If you showed like an interest in a particular title, or you showed a particular interest in the company in general and the direction that company seems to be going in, I think if you use that as your entry point, and then go and say, I'm currently looking for some work, or I would love to know what your submission guidelines are like, and stuff like that. And I think personality has a lot to do with it. You don't want to hit somebody with a sledgehammer.
Let's explore that a little further.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does someone not as established, but maybe a few credits, right? There's that fine line when you're approaching somebody, especially when you're introducing yourself for the first time. There's that fine line between fan and professional.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to, all right, how to come off as a professional, still complimentary, but a professional as opposed to a fan, yeah.
Or even what you would call a budding professional. Maybe you don't
right, even that's yeah, yeah, that even budding professional is fine. I think having a knowledge of who you're talking to, be it not necessarily the person itself, but right, that might not be bad either. But like maybe the publishing house, like right, the company, what's the company up to? What's the company doing?
Right.
What's the direction that they're currently going in or presenting to people at that particular convention? And show an interest in that and maybe ask some questions about what their right, intent is for the year or something.
Looking at the lineup and doing some research before the convention would definitely help.
I think so, especially if you're going to that convention looking for work. If that's right, one of your intentions, then you do research as to who's there.
Right. Now,
I would also add, though, that sometimes you come across a publishing house you've never heard of before because stalls are just laid out.
The benefit
of the world that we live in now, assuming that there's good Wi-Fi, is that you can Google it. You can Google it, read some information about them on right, the spot.
Yeah,
and
right,
prep yourself. And then the other thing I want to...
Preferably not in front of their booth.
And then the other thing I want to underline that Tom said was asking for their guidelines. Because a lot of times you're putting somebody on the spot by saying, well, what would you like? Or what do you want? Or can I send you? And they're already going, oh, God, no, I don't want to have to this. I don't have to that. But if you're asking for their guidelines, then it's saying, I would like to know what is the proper procedure. You don't have to use these words, but just asking for the guideline sets that up.
Yeah. But
now these days, most will respond, look at our website.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing is when you do look at the website, it's close to submissions.
Yeah.
So let's push one step further. All right. You do the good due diligence.
Yeah.
And you find the website, you do some research, and there are submission guidelines. Okay. I've done that kind of stuff before. Sure. They're closed for submissions.
Yeah.
But you still want to establish even the very beginnings of a relationship or acknowledgement. There's a couple of don'ts. Like they don't, like conventions, people, unless they're designated to, they don't want to look at your art. They don't want a writing sample at a convention.
Right.
So if you do your diligence, their submissions are not open at the time, one of the obvious questions, I see you're not open for submissions, but I love knowing an issue or knowing a story or right, knowing a book. Character. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
Do you know plans in the future when you might be open again? What else might we be able to say? What hits you when someone comes up to you as, oh, this person's worth talking to, or this person's interested?
How do I respond to that?
Yeah. Usually it's, hey, I know Janine or I know Alex Simmons. Those will always work.
Always open the door. Those are like keys.
It's like open sesame.
Hey, it worked well for you with Neil. Yeah.
I picture this glowing key in my hand when I hear those words. See, the thing is, I can't get anybody work.
No, but
so if they approach me and want to show me something, or I can't tell you how many portfolios I've looked at
right,
over years, but those people I could possibly get work, especially if I like, especially if I like what I see.
So,
I can tell you stories about, for example, when I first moved to Stoughton, I got a phone call, and there's this young sounding kid on the phone said, Mr. Snegoski, I really want to draw comics. And I'm like, okay, where'd you get this number? He says, I live right across the street. I'd like to come over and show you my portfolio. And I'm like, oh, smack. Here we go. So I was like, me being me, I'm like, all right, come on over. I'm just working on blah, blah, blah. And this kid came over, and you know who this kid was? Ed McGuinness.
Wow.
And Ed McGuinness was terrific. I looked at the stuff and I'm like, this is freaking awesome. I love this. So we went to lunch. I took him out to lunch and we talked shop, and I got him, he drew some Vampirellas before making it big and going off to Marvel and DC.
So you're still getting a cut, right?
I should be getting a cut.
So sometimes the earnestness works. Yeah, I know when I was.
I know how hard it is. You know what I mean?
When I was 15, I cold called the Marvel office to interview Stan Lee for, this is like 77, 78, to interview Stanley for the school magazine.
That's 1977, right? Not 1777.
What? Say what? What'd you say?
I said that's 1977, not 1777.
No, 1977, yeah. And I forget the woman's name who answered, but she laughed. My voice was so high and all that. She said, Stan's pretty busy. When's your deadline? And my deadline was like 4 or 5 months from now. And that tickled her. She said, I think we might be able to fit you in. And she looked and she gave me a date and we called that day. And Stan got on and he was, I think I got 8 minutes. And he said, give me a number, kid. I got to take a call. So I gave him my number and he hung up. And when the phone rang again, my mom like hockey checked me out of the way and picked up the phone and started just going off about how she loved the Incredible Hulk show. He's laughing when I finally get the phone. He's like, I got time for one more question and all that stuff. But sometimes that earnestness works. Yeah. The harder today, I would say.
It is harder.
Agree or disagree? Yeah.
It is harder today because I think a lot of people, especially people who are firmly established in the industry and working, it's hard to get that time.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, for example, like us, we were just constantly in motion. We didn't stay in one place long enough to look at a portfolio.
Did you have a table or were you
no,
just...
we didn't do, no, we didn't do a table. We just wandered. We were just like wandering and seeing people. If there was a signing or something, we would have done that, but sure. We didn't have any signings in New York or anything. No.
Let me go back because you started this thread. It's harder to get people's attention now or get their time now. Do you feel that anything is lost because of that?
Any answer could give to that, I'd sound like the old fart in the industry. I remember
Go
talking.
Ahead, fart. You're
back in the day.
We're fine. Chris and I are good. We're miles away.
Back before they invented color.
Yeah. It was, I think in the old days, it was like you could find somebody with a portfolio and say, hey, can I take a look at that? The guy could be awful, but he had a portfolio and there was something about him. You might want to look at it. But yeah, now it's just cold. A lot of it's cold in terms of how you go about the business.
I noticed that the more success that someone has had,
the harder
it is to speak with them.
Right.
And the guy
should tell you about how I perceive my level of success. Talk really to anybody.
That's really funny.
Yeah, but see, here's the point I was going for. I think that one of the things that is lost is the guidance and mentorship possibilities.
Yes.
Because, and not even talking about my experiences or Chris's or some of the people that maybe you and I know, I remember in particular two incidents, and I'll tell them very quickly. One was, and this is abbreviated, one was a great artist, very successful celebrity artist in comics, huge signing line in San Diego, huge signing line. You had to buy a ticket to get on the line to get this person's autograph. And there was this young kid standing on the line waiting. And at some point his mom, I assume it was his mother, came running up to him. They exchanged words. He reluctantly had to go off with her. And she took him off somewhere else. About a half hour, 45 minutes later, the line is over. The artist and a couple of cronies are standing there talking. And the kid comes running back with his ticket in hand. And he sees that it's over. And he very cautiously and very politely approaches and he has his card and he's saying, look, my mom had, and I already bought my ticket. And the artist tore him a new one, cut him down. And the boy walked off about maybe 10 feet, shoulders were drooping, looked at the ticket, tore it in pieces and threw it on the floor and walked off. I've never forgotten that scene. As opposed to Brian Stelfreez looking at portfolios at his table. So he's losing time, maybe doing some business, looking at portfolios. And the artwork of the person he was looking at that time, you could tell it's a person maybe in their late 20s, early 30s maybe.
Yeah. But
their drawings look more like maybe 15.
Yeah, not quite there. Yeah.
Brian did not cut him a new one, told them some very clear, simple things they could do to strengthen their approach. Was very gentle, was very respectful, but also calculating the amount of time he could dedicate to that.
Yeah.
And sent that person walking off going, okay, yeah.
I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna work.
Okay. So to me, the more distance that expands between emerging artists, young artists, people who really, they want this, but they have no guidance. They don't have art schools or things like that. Talking to these people, getting some sort of expertise, some tips, some hints, that to me is very precious. And I'm hoping that the way of the world is not going to be where that becomes almost impossible.
Yeah. I love the excitement. I love the eagerness of somebody who wants to do this crazy job. So yeah, I miss it that I don't get that opportunity to sit at a booth and have somebody come at me all the time.
I'll see what I can do for you, Tom.
I wouldn't mind. I honestly wouldn't mind.
Okay. I'm with you. And Janine, you too.
Again, you got to remember too, I've been revitalized with my perceptions of people and their work and being new at it because she's new at it. And I'm looking at stuff through her eyes now.
That's something we were talking about in the green room, Chris, before you got here. Actually, wonderful segue. Let's go into that. When you met, a little bit of the history, in case you guys, for some strange reason, missed the original interview with this team, which was a year ago. You two knew each other.
Yes, in high school. Right?
Because you went to school together as younger people. And then you went off and had your separate lives and got married, all that kind of stuff. And Janine, you had become a teacher?
Yes.
What grade?
Seventh.
Seventh grade teacher, right? Okay. Yeah. How did Tom and you wind up coming back together? Just give us a little bit of brief, just for the folks who may not know.
I was teaching a unit on what's better, the book or the movie. And I wanted to have an author come in and talk to my students, someone who had a book turned into a movie. And I had been following Tom's career, and I knew that he had three of his books, The Fallen, turned into television movies for ABC Family Channel. So I emailed him out of the blue and said, hey, it's me. Would you be willing to come and talk to my students? And I gave him the rundown of what we were looking for. And he emailed me back 5 days later. And
you want me to show you the wound?
Yeah.
But he emailed me back and came and talked to 300 seventh graders in Danvers, Massachusetts. And that was in 2019.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic happened and I was at home teaching and he was working and we decided to write a novel together.
And which was the craziest, I don't even know where it came from, honestly. Me noticing in her almost like a latent talent that she wasn't taking advantage of, it almost like I almost had to convince her that she had an ability that I could see. And the more I fanned the fire, I could see her getting more and more interested in maybe doing something with this talent. The book thing was just like, it was like the next step. It was like, we could fool around with short stories and stuff like that, but what the hell? We're trapped in our houses. Let's write a book.
Yeah.
So Tom, you were fanboying Janine is what you said.
In a way, yeah. It's funny. I hadn't, at the time that I realized that I could see that she definitely had an ability, a writing ability. It was like through texts and things that I was seeing. I hadn't even seen any actual, because she had been doing writing, but I hadn't seen it yet. She told me about it, but I hadn't seen it yet. So a lot of my gut was telling me, was coming from the fact that just our exchanges, our text exchanges and emails, there was just a very funny style. There was like, It was obvious that she knew what she was doing.
Spider's senses were tingling. Yes.
Yeah. Janine, did you sense the same potential in Tom?
Yes. Now, I had followed his career and I had read, he had sent my sister a few of his books. and I stole them from her and I read them. And I was like, yeah, I always knew he was going to do it. So
that's good. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now what I wanted to focus on was what you had said in, again, in the green room about when you started to work with her, how it had an effect on you.
Yeah. It was almost like I was getting as much out of it as she was. I may even have got more out of it and still getting more out of it because it was like, I've been doing this a long time. And I think I was at a stage in my career slash life that it had become like just going through the motions. I was doing good work. It wasn't like I was like, I'm just hacking this out. It was never that. I still enjoyed what I was doing. I still put myself into the work, but I think I lost a certain charge that I used to have when I first started out. And working with her on the book and various other things, even like the comic stuff that came a little bit after, it almost like it was making me look at it with through her eyes. And I got this like really fun. It was fun again. I had this sense of, man, I'm pretty freaking lucky to be able to do this for my job. And I lost that. It was like almost like it was just, yeah, this is what I do. This is what I get a paycheck for. But with her, it made me look at things differently. And I really appreciated that immensely. And it became almost to the point where this is what I want to do. This way is fun again. I don't want to go back to sitting in this room by myself.
Right. How do you two work together now? Just to put that cap on there, since you said that, how do you two work together now?
So on Mondays and Wednesdays, I drive from my house to his house and we work in his office together side by side. And then on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and sometimes weekends, depending on what we have, we Skype and we work in Google Docs. But lately he's had a project that he's working on with Chris Golden.
There's that name again.
Tuesdays are our separate days, although we usually like meet for lunch for a couple of hours and talk about what we're working on. And so he's been working on that, and I've been working on a short story or a couple of short stories.
Uh-huh. Okay. I had wanted just to tie that in, Chris, because it had come up organically in the conversation about how she rejuvenated him.
Yeah. And when I think back on it, it fascinates me. I'm fascinated by the fact that I was totally unaware of the fact that I was just going through the motions.
Right.
Totally unaware.
It's amazing how that can, you almost get numb to it.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly
for you, this happy coincidence.
Adorable. You know? Old friend. Who's intelligent, talented, and so forth, came into your life again.
Right. And I think I hope that we do that thing for each other. I hope that in terms of I'm giving her something that's interesting and exciting that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
You're still working together, so there's got to be something happening.
And it's still really fun.
Chris, can we, I'm just curious because we really hadn't, and this seems, again, organic, since they're working together, can we at least list what you have done together? Just again, for anybody who hasn't heard any of the previous interviews, what have you worked on together?
During the pandemic, we wrote a novel together.
Which in and of itself is stupid. Talk about really ridiculous that we even attempted something like that when her skills were still in the process of happening. And the fact that we're working through the computer, we're not working face to face. Technology that I didn't know what the frig was going on, like a caveman when it comes to the computer and stuff. So that in and of itself was nuts. That we would like the endeavor was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then what?
7 months. We finished it on Christmas Eve 2020.
Wow.
And we did the Vampirella Valentine's Day special, which came out in Valentine's Day 2021. We did a Vampiverse miniseries, and we just finished writing our third one. We did a Panther miniseries. Fall for Dynamite. And then we have, can we say the
company, but they haven't made the official announcement. Yet, so.
We have another miniseries coming out with Mad Cave Studios. That's due out in July of next year. And what else have we done together?
Lots of proposals, pitches and proposals for stuff that's like actually in motion. Yes. That if it happens, we're going to be screwed because it's like too much work.
Oh, gee. I feel so bad for you.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and the very first comic book work that she did, she hadn't a clue. She had
no idea
how comic books were put together and stuff like that. But I thought, oh, what the hell? I can do this. If I can teach you how to write a book, I can teach you how to write comics.
Was that the Vengeance of Vampirella series?
No, I did that one totally solo.
Ah, okay.
The revival. I did the original one back in the 90s. And the Vampirella Valentine's Day. Look at, she's even got a prop. Oh, that's her very first. That's her very first comic.
Yes.
Wow.
Valentine's Day special. Yeah.
Is that Vlad in the background?
That's Dracula in the background.
How long did it take for you to feel comfortable, find your feet, find your voice, whatever, Janine?
I'm still not there. Although I feel more confident now in at least knowing the parts and knowing the process. Hmm. And I feel like I'm developing a better eye for artwork and how things might be laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time we prefer just to work together, and we never got to the point where, like when he works again with Chris Golden, they're doing a project now and like he'll write two scenes and then give it to Chris and Chris will read it and write two scenes. And we never got to that point.
Now,
we were supposed to.
That was the original battle plan for the novel.
Yeah.
Is that I was going to get her to feel comfortable and I was going to write chapters and she would write chapters. Yeah. And go back and forth.
So never. Is it that you're not comfortable yet, or did you find a different method that works for this particular partnership?
I think that method works for us.
Yeah, I think the actual, two of us looking at each other and talking and trying things out and stuff like that, that worked for us. So
Lennon-McCartney sitting across from each other type.
We never changed it. It just was working too well
to
abandon that.
Yeah.
And from there, we can learn that there's no one way for everything.
No, absolutely not.
What works with you and Christopher Golden is fantastic, and that's great. And what the two of you, how you work, also completely legitimate.
And that's
the lesson, the takeaway is find what works.
Yes.
And embrace that and run with that.
Well, that's what I find when I'm talking with young writers, that people who want to do this stuff, and they're like, they get that opportunity to talk to somebody who's doing it. And they just bombard you with these questions. And half the time, my answer to these questions, my way, it might be completely different than your way.
Yeah.
I said, you need to find what works for you. This is what I do. Why don't you take what I'm saying to you right now and bring that back to your hovel, your cave, and see if that works for you and change it. What works for you here and what doesn't work for you here, and make it work for you.
Yeah. So you're 4 years into the journey together.
4 years into the journey, yeah.
What shortcuts have you found developed between the two of you?
Oh, shortcuts.
I would imagine day one.
Yeah. It's not
much slower than now, right? Janine knows format better now.
Yeah, she can lay out. Yeah. She can lay out if we have like an emergency and I can't work on something, I have to do something else. She could sit down and maybe lay out a couple of pages.
Yeah,
that would help us.
Yeah,
in the process.
Yeah, I find we've had to do for our comic that's coming out in July. We've had to do administrative things, and I think you were working on your Chris stuff and I took that over and then we went over it together afterwards.
And she loves research.
So, yeah.
She's the research.
Yeah.
I my philosophy is shit, I'll make it up. I lie. I just make it up. Oh, Switzerland? Of course I've been to Switzerland. I just make shit up.
Yeah. Oh, so you should have been an actor then. Yeah, I know karate and I can rollerblade. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I've had, you know what? I actually had somebody come up to me. I wish I remembered what it was that I was what I wrote about. But they were praising me and asking me when I visited this place in Europe because I nailed it.
Doesn't have a passport.
I don't even have a freaking passport. But I nailed everything about this place. And it was all made up. It was all made up. I literally probably read a description in Google. I went on to Google and read a paragraph, and I made it all up. And they were like, oh, we wish we'd known you'd been there. We would love to have gotten together with you. And I'm like, nah.
Next time.
Next time I'm there.
Alex does Alex always does meticulous, as far as I'm concerned, meticulous research. And I Google for 3 to 5 minutes.
I know.
Or a YouTube video. I'm good. I got to figure out something about a tank, blackjacks in a tank. Two YouTube videos on that tank, and I'm good to go.
Don't you find yourself like you're wasting time with the research?
My methodology for that 9 times out of 10, or 8 times out of 10, I'll put it that way, is I'll write the circumstances from my head, and then I'll go do the research and make the changes that are necessary.
Fill in the detail.
There are times when there was a project I was working on during COVID where I had to keep doing research because it was, and Chris likes to talk about my age, this was an era before I was born. And it was
very few ages before he was born.
There's too much. You know, the whole thing about the quality of quartz stones in a cave. No, there was too much information that I just didn't have. And it was affecting me being able to lay out almost like 12 pages.
Yeah.
So I had to have that information. And of course, it was an obscure piece of information.
Of course.
So it was days and days of looking. But then that's when my Sherlock Holmes kicks in, or my Sherlock CSI kicks in, where I'll keep going and I'll connect pieces and things. And I'm like, okay. And then suddenly the door opens and now I've got it.
Alex, he'll include more detail. I'll say it's this kind of tank and go get into the tank and drive it into a burning forest. And then you really don't worry about the shade of.
Yeah, it's again, not using the tank reference, but I think there was a couple of times with a vehicle where 1930s car, the stick shift and certain things are in certain places. And I've never driven a 1930s car. Yeah. So one of the things I'd forgotten about was you got to pull out the choke. Yeah. You got to know that. Otherwise, it's like, what? Now, maybe a bunch of people won't, but I'll tell you, with blackjack, and I feel like I digress, but I'll just say this very quickly. One of the things that used to get me sales when I was selling my books at conventions and things, somebody would always walk up and go, if you can tell me what kind of guns he has, I'll buy your book. I said, Walker Colts. How much? And that's opposed to the Navy Colts, which came out in and go, okay, I'll buy two. Yeah.
The gun people are the worst.
Yeah.
They're awful.
Or the best.
I try and do a little more research on guns because I know that. True. But for the rare times I get to write blackjack, those are the two words I know about that gun.
Yeah.
Walker and Colt.
And Colt.
And that's it. That's where it goes. I want to bring back to both of you by asking Janine a question. What was it like to see Vampirella, the cosplayer, but Vampirella standing in front of you after writing her for this period of time?
It was really cool to see her, and she was a great Vampirella. But I think my first reaction was, I can't wait to tell her that I write that character. I was like, so excited. And normally, if people, I don't know, I don't generally, for some reason, people will ask me what I do. Oh, I write comic books, and I don't really get into it with them. But she knew who she was, obviously. And I thought, she'll be impressed. That'll be cool. She'll be excited about that. She'll be as excited as I am. And she really was. She was.
Oh, yeah.
She was thrilled to meet us.
That's a cool feeling.
Really, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
it was fun to even watch that interaction.
Right.
I just
got reinvigorating you. You got to watch that. Yeah, that's great.
We're just fun. It's fun to see the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Just the two.
We're getting close to the hour, and I love that this conversation has really been about the creative process and the impact it can have on us personally. I think that's really good. I'm just curious, is there anything else that you want to share about that before I ask my last question? And of course, I'm sure Chris has at least one more question.
Yeah, just that I am still in awe of the fact that it has done so much for even my creative process to broken out of the doldrums. That I'd found myself in for quite a few years. Again, it's almost like autopilot. You just go into autopilot. I was still writing characters that I love. What I did find, this is interesting because I just realized this now. What I did find I was having really big problems with was my novel writing.
Yeah?
Yeah, that.
Why?
I don't know. It was almost as if.
What kind of problems were you having?
Just, I couldn't find anything that I wanted to do.
Ah.
Because you invest so much freaking time in a novel that I really wanted to be excited about something, and I wasn't getting excited about anything. I could literally go into my computer now and find 25 ideas that were started, and then it just runs out of gas. You'll read this elaborate outline, and then it just stops because I would just suddenly say, yeah, I don't really want to do it. Anyway.
So how about since working with Janine?
Since working with Janine, I'm like, I've always got something. Like all of a sudden she'll get a text that says,
yeah, I have another idea.
Listen to this. And it's just some crazy three sentence thing, but it's enough to invigorate us to maybe approach it and write a little more complicated to get to later. We have like tons of pages of notes on comic ideas, book ideas. Hopefully we'll both stay alive long enough that we'll be able to do most of them.
Another 40 years or more?
I hope so.
Yeah, all of that.
So, so this energy that you see in Janine's writing, have you seen it in the finished work and been tickled? Oh, there it is. There's that energy.
Yeah, my biggest problem with her right now, and it's a problem that I've had like from the start with her, is that she doesn't have that confidence.
Okay.
She doesn't see it in herself, what I see. So I think that holds her back a little bit. I think she overthinks everything. I think when she starts to like possibly be creative and come up with crazy ideas and concepts, she overthinks it to the point where she's like diminishing the enthusiasm.
Let me just ask something. Did you ever feel that in your early days?
Yeah, but eventually I think what it came down to with me was that I was either going to do it or I wasn't going to do it. Do I want to do this or do I not want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I almost had to convince myself that, all right, I got to push that shit aside and just do it if I want to do this as my job, if I want to do this as my profession. I'm trying to get her to get to that place with a level of confidence, even though I know she doesn't know everything. I don't know everything. I still doubt when I'm writing that stuff.
Alex knows everything. So Janine, let's hear, if you don't mind, let's hear your side of it, because you were a teacher for many years. Do you think some of it comes from there, or does it come from, for me, it comes from a glorious family upbringing, Irish upbringing, where nothing was good enough ever. And if it was, you were too big for your britches. And I've spent a lifetime getting over that. Is it partly from a culture thing? Is it partly from teaching? What do you think?
I think it's a person. It's a personality flaw. I've always overthought everything, and even when I was teaching, I would plan out a unit, and I would get to a point where I had all of my ideas all over my paper or my butcher paper or my notebook or whatever. And I'd be like, all right, I have to start the unit tomorrow. Where do I start? And sometimes I would fail miserably, and other times it would turn out fine because I had a lot of years of teaching behind me. Sure. And eventually, as I'd get through the unit and I'd think back to all of the lessons that I had done, by the time I got to the end, it was fine because I had hit all the things I needed to hit and everything was there. And I just had to take a step back from it. And I think that it's maybe possible that I'm doing the same. It is possible that I'm doing the same thing with this, where I am working on a short story right now. And I have a million ideas, and the story can go in a million different directions, but I'm also having a hard time deciding which one to go with.
Right.
And I think eventually it will come together, but sometimes it's like my indecision that I can't just pick something and do it.
I like another New Englander up there, Stephen King, likes to say he likes to let them fight it out, the different ideas, and the best one wins. And sometimes that indecision is because the fight's still going on.
Yeah, I think sometimes too, like with my last short story, which you haven't seen the final version of, I think sometimes I need to stop all of the planning and just start writing. Just
jump in,
see where it takes me, because I've found that in the few pieces that I've done, I've found that once I give them running room, the characters will let me know who they are, and they take over, and I go, oh, of course they would do that. Or of course they would never do that. So sometimes it's just jumping in.
One of the things that tickles Alex that I say a lot is let it suck. Get in, do this, not worry about it. Just let it suck. And if this isn't working, why not? The why not is the most helpful, and it goes, because it should be here. That's what we'll do.
Can I tell an interesting story that just happened today? your audience will probably enjoy this, and you two will probably enjoy this too. I don't know if you'll experience this. This is probably describing more my psychosis than it is my talent. I'm working on something with Chris Golden right now that he had outlined. I was called in to help him because his deadlines get so crazy.
Sure.
And I'm like the closest thing that he can think of to somebody who gets how he does things in the same place. In the current outline, there was a scene that I was going to be working on. He gave me a written outline. So I'm reading the particular scene. And a lot of times I will map out what I want to do with the scene, like even like dialogue. I'll like scrawl some dialogue and kind of take it where it needs to go.
Right.
This fucking spot in my French, this scene was kicking and screaming the entire, I was just like, I can't get this thing to work. I can't. It's almost like all I could picture is like a donkey, like the legs kicking and like spinning around. This has been going on for like a day and a half, 2 days. I've been trying to map this thing out. This morning, because I got up and I started working and it was still doing this, all of a sudden I'm in the kitchen, I'm making myself a cup of tea, and it was almost as if a separate part of my brain or my brain just said, you know what, Tom? It doesn't work. It doesn't work. You're not going to make it work because it doesn't. It doesn't work. Back away from it and rethink this. You're going to have to come up with another way to do this scene, even though Chris's outline wants it done a certain way. It doesn't work.
And how does Chris respond to that?
I was like,
he's coming for him now.
I was just standing there like somebody had just smacked me with a newspaper.
So if you resolve it, is Chris going to be receptive to the resolution?
Yeah, Chris gets it. When I say something doesn't work, lot of the times you'll go, oh yeah, you're right, that doesn't work, sorry. Yeah. But I came up with, after my brain beat me up, I found, as I was going about my business in the kitchen, making a cup of tea and doing stuff, that I found an alternative that doesn't necessarily do what Chris wanted to do, but it provides the advancement in the storyline to get us where we need to go for our future scenes.
Here's a Chris go. Here's a Chris Ryan quote. It serves the story.
Gotta serve the story.
Yeah.
And that was why this wasn't working. I felt that everything that I was trying to do in this scene had been done already. We already saw all that. We know this information. These characters talking to each other are only regurgitating what we already know.
When you threw out the scene that wasn't working.
Yeah.
Again, this is something that so many emerging writers are so reluctant to do. But when you did that, when you took that chance, and Janine, when you gave your characters some space to run, what's the experience like? The doors open to the...
You would like to think that the heavenly choir is open up and everything's one. Oh my God, I'm going to work properly now. No, I feel like I got the kicked out of me. And I don't even want to write the freaking thing anymore. But I got to, because I told him I would.
So when you make that move and you make that decision, does it free you up? Is it a...
Yeah, because I can see it now. I'm not going to be fighting with it.
And do you ask yourself, why did I torture myself
I tortured myself because it was there. Chris wrote the outline. It was there, and this is what he wanted, and I wanted to do that. But the more I read it and reread it and reread it again and read it again and scrawling crazy-ass notes and writing dialogue, it just wasn't working. No matter what I friggin', and I could feel myself getting angry and angrier, trying to make it work, and it just wasn't going to work. Right.
Not to get you to give up information about this particular, but in general, was it the plot or the characters that were refusing to move forward with you?
It was both, because it was a character who was going to be doing all this talking back and forth with another character already knew what she was going to be talking about with this guy. So what this guy was going to give her, she already knew.
Right.
So why were they having this conversation? Why did she seek this guy out to have this conversation? There was no reason for it.
Yeah.
Tom, before you say anything more.
What's that?
Too late. Before you say anything more, move to your left a little bit more. There you go. Thank you. Yeah, you're leaning out of the frame a lot, right?
Okay.
And Janine, when you let your characters run, you have a similar situation where it's freeing, or do you still beat yourself up?
Oh, I beat myself up. Oh, she beats herself up constantly.
That's that editor on the shoulder, right?
I've said this, and I'll say it to you guys. And he doesn't like when I say this, but sometimes I think I'm a better editor than I am a writer.
And that is completely untrue.
And you know what? We're going to let you duke that one out on another episode. No, because I think that's a valid conversation, absolutely, but we've run out of time. Chris, did you want to say anything in terms of thanking them and all that kind of cool stuff or rounding in?
Sure, I always want to thank them. I love these conversations because we don't tie ourselves into preset 5 questions.
Yeah.
At this point, we know that it's going to be an interesting conversation, and I always learn the most when creative people are having an organic conversation. So I really am grateful for both of your willingness to jump in here and just see where it goes. That's a real gift to us and to the people who watch. So thank you.
Oh, I love to talk about it because it makes me realize I'm spewing. And then wow, that's a pretty profound. I should do that more often. I should write that down. I should put that in a book. Yeah, because today's experience was really unique. Because it was like my brain just stepped back from me and yelled at me and said, "You're being a freaking moron. This doesn't work."
Yeah.
You know,
The key is that you are able to take that and make it actionable. Yeah. The mistake is falling under the weight of that and stopping. And it was great to hear both of you find ways to move forward with that.
Yeah.
I was going to just say that there's a thing that business people do and some creatives do is they have a brain trust, or they have a master class where they get together and they throw things on the table and they discuss them and look at them from different angles. And sometimes, like when you were saying, Tom, about how you'd fallen into a pattern because you were always working solo, right? You didn't have that situation, either a collaborator or a gathering where you could bounce things out and talk things out and all that. So I think these are useful, certainly for me, and Chris has just admitted the same. These conversations are useful for us, but I'm really excited about the fact that I know some of the, because I've heard from some of the young writers or emerging writers or struggling writers that have been listening to our program, where they go, I didn't think of that until I heard this. And that was, so it's really great. And so I too appreciate everything that you've done, which is another reason why you guys are going to keep coming back. Because
I love coming back. Because again, it makes me realize things that I don't realize until I start talking.
I'd love for us to do editor versus writer within our own selves.
Yeah.
I think everyone struggles with that. And hopefully we'll remember to do that for next time.
Not going to forget, because I wrote it down. And because Chris and I are going to get better at scheduling our guests. So we're going to schedule you for next month.
And so hopefully Sonny won't be so insistent this next time.
That's his bow wow, folks. His dog is just... Had an emergency and had to be dealt with. Yeah. But no, we'll schedule you for next month. And if our schedules work out, then absolutely you'll be back in a matter of a few weeks and we can pick up on that. Okay.
That would be
Thank
really
you
cool.
again. It's always a pleasure. And also next time we want to hear what else you're working on, because I know there's things simmering under the pot top there.
Yeah.
Chris, great to see you.
Thank you. Sorry again for the delay. And hope to see you. A couple of weeks would be great.
And everybody listening, thank you for listening. Thank you for being there with us, for us. And please
drop a question or a comment about Tom and Janine, please.
That's just what I was going to say. So that works. Go ahead, Chris.
Like I said, and hit the like and subscribe. We hardly ever say that, but go ahead.
That's it.
This episode deserves it.
That's right. Like and subscribe and stay with us and be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Peace.